Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hello and welcome to Nothing Concrete, the Barbican podcast. I'm Ben Eshmade, and for this visit to our archive, we return to an interview with actor and director Desiree Akhavan, speaking to her in detail about her film, The Miseducation of Cameron Post.
And that's what was in my head while we were making it. John Hughes and Todd Haynes had a bastard love child. I think it would be this movie.
Akhavan's The Miseducation of Cameron Post is the follow-up to her debut, Appropriate Behaviour, and is drawn from the 2012 novel of the same name. So, to the drama. Set in the 90s, the film stars Chloe Grace Moretz as Cameron Post, who finds herself after a post-prom outing in a Christian gay conversion camp. She bonds with new outsider friends Jane Fonda, played by Sasha Lane, and Forrest Goodluck, played by Adam Red Eagle.
I've come to meet our new disciple. Welcome, Cameron. I'm Dr. Lydia Marsh. I'm the director of God's Promise.
You can call me Cam.
Cameron's already a masculine name. To abbreviate it to something even less feminine only exacerbates your gender confusion.
Back in 2018, I met up with the director in London to discuss her second feature.
I would say that the journey from first film to second film was a hustle. It was a hustle because it took creating my own opportunities again, but which I expected. I never expected it to be any different, but I do think sometimes you make a first film and you get scooped up by the industry and suddenly the right script comes across your table and or you get a 3-picture deal. And I mean, every time that happens, it happens with a male director. So being my gender with my interests, I did not expect that to happen. And so it was hand in hand with Cecilia Fergiuele, who is my co-writer on this film and produced Appropriate Behavior and produced Cameron Post. And we optioned this book and pushed it every step of the way. And every time we had a door slam in our face, you know, we found a backdoor entrance. So it was a hustle, but it was also, for a movie, it went by surprisingly fast.
How did you find that process of obviously in your first film, you were in the film, it was an alternative perhaps version of you. So this is very more, you were a step back.
So I was terrified going into this. And many times I wrote to Cecilia saying that I was underqualified to direct this and that we should just pack our bags and go home. And she pushed me every step of the way. And once we got started, once we got the green light and had the cast together and were in prep, it was so natural and fantastic and so much better than starring in it. I will never, ever do this again.
Really?
Yes. I actually know this because I made the mistake of starring in my work again while directing on a television series for Channel 4 that's out in October. It's called The Bisexual. And I started it and it was hell. And I was so spoiled by the experience of shooting Cameron Post and not being in it myself. I forgot how emotional it becomes when your body is other people's property. And when you're acting, you're someone else's real estate, you know? You got a mic on you at all times. I mean, also my work has a lot of sex in it. So the television series had many sex scenes and I didn't realize how much of a toll that would take on me emotionally. And then to have to direct and shove that down I think it's good to be vulnerable as an actor, but as a director, you are at the helm of a ship and you need to keep it together.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It was so hard. And Cameron Post was so luxurious because I guess I just got to curate this amazing crew and this amazing cast. And then like a conductor, you know, step in crescendo when it needed crescendo, step back, let it come down at the right time. And you take the temperature. You see, like, what do people need? When we first came to set, Chloe Moretz, the actress who plays the lead role, didn't want backseat driving. And it was really clear to me that she had a lot to say. So by the end of the week, when we shot her first sex scene, I didn't even watch a rehearsal. I hid the entire crew. It was just herself and Quinn Shepherd, who plays Coley, in the back of the car. This was the first sex scene of the film. And Ashley Conniff, the cinematographer, in the front seat, and the focus puller hid underneath the vehicle, and it was parked. And we, the entire crew, hid with the monitor in the high school building about 300 yards away.
Oh, wow.
And I thought, you know, if this isn't right, I'll step in. But let me give her a chance to do her own thing. She clearly has an idea here.
Yeah.
And I watched the first take and it was like magic. And I had never experienced it as a director, watching a monitor and everyone around me, we all got chills and we all saw magic on screen. And that whole sex scene is in a one-er because we didn't need to get coverage for it.
Mm.
She just did it. And I just kind of knew, get out of that girl's way. And I think the way you can intuit people's needs and step back when you're not acting in something, when you're just doing your job as a director, is a really powerful, beautiful thing. And I was really grateful to have that experience.
Speaking of Chloe, she'd taken a hiatus. Mm-hmm. I think it's fair to say that she'd done a lot of roles and doing a lot of work and felt that she was being stretched a bit.
60 films by the time she was 19.
Wow.
Yeah.
So obviously, if she wanted to go back into filmmaking and being an actor, she wanted the right part. So that's the greatest compliment you could have had.
It really was. I mean, we never thought of Chloe for this because we didn't think she'd want to make a movie like this.
Mm.
So we had been holding auditions for a few weeks and I hadn't found anyone that was right. And I was kind of reaching this point with my financier where we were thinking, maybe we shouldn't make this film. We couldn't find the right cast. While I was on the phone with him talking it out, my casting director put a post-it in front of me that said, Chloe wants to meet. And I was totally shocked.
And you were a fan, was it?
Yeah. I was a fan, but I never thought of her for Cameron. It just didn't feel like we were making a Chloe Moretz film, which is, to me at that time, was like a blockbuster, or a studio movie about, you know, straight white girl who falls in love with the boy, who falls in love with her, and then she gets leukemia or some shit. I was not expecting, she had been in, I loved her, but I didn't love the kind of teen films that were featuring her in the past few years. And I didn't realize she had taken a hiatus. And when someone said, Chloe wants to meet about Cameron, I was suddenly really excited because I thought, oh, that's really clever casting, because I would never consider her in this role. And I really like a juxtaposition of genre, of comedy, of casting. I love Tom Cruise in Magnolia. I love Jim Carrey in his straight roles. I think when you see someone whose persona is built in one direction play something off kilter to that, like Chloe to me was an ingenue, like a princess.
Mm.
And to see if she could play, you know, a dyke with swagger, I was like, that is exciting to me. Not to see someone, I don't want to preach to the choir. I want to make something that throws you off base. And Chloe is really loses herself and all the persona that I've seen her build over the years. You know, she's in Clouds of Sils Maria and she plays this Hollywood starlet. And I feel like we couldn't have gone further away from that with this movie.
I've been brought closer to God and I can feel him guiding me.
Like, Helen's a really good friend and we're positive influences on each other. That's her, by the milk. That girl's name is Jane Fonda, like her actual name. Either that or she's lying. She could be lying.
The thing that I found quite interesting when I was reading a little bit of background, the thing that made it suddenly make sense was the fact that you were a fan of John Hughes movies.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like a weird Breakfast Club, I suppose.
Thank you. That is high, high praise in my book. And that's what was in my head while we were making it. John Hughes and Todd Haynes had a bastard love child. I think it would be this movie. I love John Hughes' film. I love teen films in general. And I feel like in the past 2 decades, teen films have started to really talk down to the experience of coming of age and really neutered it.
Yeah.
And took away the stakes and the heartbreak and the ugliness and the sexiness. And I wanted to make a film that had an urgency to it. And that one thing that I realized the further I get into my 30s is like, I'm pretty much the same person I was at 15. I just have experience. And when you're 15, you have this personality, and you have these desires, and you have this intelligence or stupidity or whatever. And this desire that's like engulfing you, desire to be touched, desire to love, desire to be loved. Yet no outlet for it, and also constantly being told the adults around you or by the media around you to doubt yourself, to doubt every instinct, and you feel diseased in some way. Like to me, this Gay Conversion Therapy Center, it wasn't an agenda I had to bring focus. I thought it was an out-of-date problem. I didn't realize it was relevant until like halfway through my research that it was unfortunately a very relevant problem that's growing. To me, gay conversion therapy was a metaphor for what it was to be any teenager, gay or straight, that even as a straight kid, you feel diseased in some way and that you really want to exorcise yourself of anything that makes you different from the mainstream. And that's the story I wanted to tell. And to me, that felt like a really universal John Hughes way telling a story. From the people I've spoken to who've experienced gay conversion therapy, it can be a total bang fest. It's like a bathhouse of sorts. But also, I mean, it's one of the most exciting things about coming of age is finally meeting someone who speaks your language.
Yeah.
And that was one of those moments I wanted to capture in the movie.
There, again, to, you know, real ensemble cast, I really loved John Gallagher as Reverend Wick, and obviously his sister in the film, Jennifer L., as Dr. Lydia March. There is a lovely moment towards later in the film where he's confronted with the idea that he doesn't know what he's doing. And it's very revealing at that point because these adults are playing, really, or they're trying to enforce their own point of view onto these children. And yeah, I found that quite powerful.
I think that's a really universal feeling for anybody coming of age is no adult really knows what they're doing. Mm. And I think this happens for people at different stages of their life, but when they realize that their parents or the adults in their life that they've been blindly following don't actually have all the answers and they're kind of winging it. Like everyone's just winging it and hoping that it's okay, that the pieces will fall in the right place. But then, I don't know, I definitely had this moment, I was in college, where I looked at my parents and I was like, oh my God, you don't know what you're doing. It is the blind leading the blind. And it's around the same time that you start to question what home is and where home is.
Yeah.
That's something that I think most people face in their lives at different ages, depending on what your circumstances are. And I always wanted that to be a major theme in the film. And to me, a theme that felt really universal in John Hughes' films. Again, to bring it back to him, if that's the theme of this interview.
I changed.
How?
It was God, Cameron. I asked for his help, and he gave it to me in the form of those allies. I was so deeply unhappy, but I didn't think I was worth saving. And I wonder if you've asked that of yourself. Are you worth saving?
Yeah, it's interesting because they can kind of escape at any point, I think is the point by the end of the film. But as you say, they're clinging on to fathers or mothers and seeking their approval or searching, you know, again, maybe back to religion, to a higher power to relieve them. But yeah, it's fascinating because there is, even though there are walls, they're not trapped there.
Yeah, I mean, define trapped. I think being trapped by the expectations and trying to please the adults who raised you is being trapped. Yeah. But yeah, physically they're not being held down. But any circumstances that are awful in your life, you like no one's holding you down to them. You're holding yourself down to them. And I think that's true of adults in any circumstances. We all establish every person for themselves, what's right, what's wrong, what's successful, what's not successful, and then you trap yourself to it.
Mm.
Why do we live in London? It's exhausting. Because I've trapped myself here. No one's put a chain around my neck saying I need to pay a ridiculous amount in rent and then, like, keep my head above water with this insane rent. But I decided it so I could attend Barbican screenings more often.
Excellent. Good answer. I mean, Forrest, good luck as Adam Red-Eagle. I don't know if this was in the book, but I loved that idea of the two spirits that he talks about. It was in the book, yeah.
I should put credit where it's due. Emily Danforth, who wrote the book, she's incredible, and this is her story. Not personally, I don't mean like she didn't go through gay conversion therapy, but she created these characters and then gifted them to me. And Adam Red-Eagle was so fascinating because I had never heard of Two-Spirit. He identifies as Two-Spirit, which is a Native American term, and he's Lakotan. So Winkta is the word that they use. It was really important to us to cast an actor who was Native American. Adam and I went to the Two-Spirit community in New York. There was a space in Chinatown where they had rented out and had a community headquarters. And we got to meet with a bunch of people who identify as Two-Spirit. And I think it's in the movie now, I think, verbatim. But what they taught us was that literally the word Winkta means killed by a woman. So it's like the male part of his soul is being beaten by the female part of him. I don't know where it classifies on the queer or the trans spectrum, but I don't think it's good to equate them because Native language and traditions are kind of their own thing and can't be soaked up into another culture. They kind of are. And I don't know where it comes into play with gender and sexuality, but it was very much its own community and its own classification, and also a very different standing in the community, depending on where they had grown up and how into res life they had been as children.
We touched on this earlier, but sort of final question is, I'm sure you've received much positive feedback from the film, personal feedback. The problems of conversion camps, as you found out, are still there. I mean, do you think that people will get a little bit more hope or sort of a different side to the story as part of this film? I mean, it's obviously complicated for you because obviously it's, I don't even want to say it's entertainment, but it is.
It's entertainment. I'll proudly say it's entertainment or without fear. Also I hope that it encourages people to vote. Elections are coming up in America and all that is evil is being represented by the Republican Party right now. So it's important to me that people vote. We went to DC, Chloe and I, with this film, and we were working with Matthew Shirka, who's a survivor of gay conversion therapy, who has launched the Born Perfect movement with a team of lawyers, and they're advocating to eradicate gay conversion therapy, I think, on a legal basis. Before, it was for minors exclusively, against minors on a legal level. It's been really hard because of the freedom of speech protests, but right now it's actually really interesting. The way that they've been able to do it is through consumer fraud. If you cannot free someone of being gay, then that's consumer fraud. And actually, have they been getting some traction on that argument, which is really interesting and exciting. So we were working with him to bring attention to the issue. I think around 14 states have outlawed it with minors in the US. In the UK, this still exists. Really? And with the majority of BAME constituents. I don't know. I've never heard that term before. I'm thinking people of color is the American equivalent of BAME. But I think, that's been the focus of, in America, it's more white evangelical Christian following. Yeah, I definitely want to bring attention to this issue and I want it to be something in people's minds. But also it has to do with people voting. It's really important that people show up for the politics they believe in. Yeah. And
the younger generation as well.
Exactly. And be mobilized. I think I can't speak for this country, but in America and I do think it exists in this country. I just won't speak to it at length because I can't because of my accent and I would be killed. But there's a lot of fear bubbling beneath the surface in America. Like we're suddenly exposed to this new neo-Nazi constituent that was there all along and we chose to ignore it. And I think it has a lot to do with poverty and education, basic human rights that aren't being addressed in that country. All of this to me has to do with fear and anger about people's state. And if there was just a little bit more equality in what it is to be a human being living in America, then a lot of this would be eradicated, but there isn't. And I do believe that voting and being an informed voter is the answer to that.
Thanks to Desiree for speaking to us. The Miseducation of Cameron Post is an important yet entertaining piece of filmmaking. The drama seems just as fresh and relevant today as it was when it was made. I'm Ben Eshmade. Thanks for listening to this archive edition of Nothing Concrete, the Barbican podcast. Here to inspire more people to discover and love the arts with weekly episodes of archive finds and theme series. Subscribe to Nothing Concrete on Acast, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. And if you can, leave us a review to help us get the word out.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.